who'd made some money in business, bought a piece of land in the Warm Springs Township, built a big meeting house, and established a Christian fellowship. Four leaders set up fellowships in the villages around Jiazhou and put into practice Mao Zedong's policy of the countryside surrounding the city. Gao Shunchang travelled between these four fellowships preaching the gospel. Nowadays, the Bureau of Religion and the Public Security Police no longer bothered them as before. Even more unusual was that almost more people than the fellowship could handle were asking to join their church. More than 30 people now participated in the Warm Springs Fellowship's daily witness meetings and Bible study sessions, and there were upwards of 200 people at their weekend revival meetings. The parishioners introduced new members every day, and some, like Little C, just walked in off the street. Gao Shunchan had once worried that if the church was too active, it might attract the attention of the authorities. But Li Tiezhen and the other three leaders had already dedicated their lives to God's work, and they wanted to press forward with no regard for the consequences. There was no way Gao Shunchan could restrain them. For example, when Li Tiezhen wanted to put spring couplets with Christian themes up on the church gate, Gao Shunchan opposed this as being too conspicuous. In China, there are things that you can do, but you cannot be too loud about doing them, he thought. Gao could not change Li's mind, and Li Tiezhen said that they not only had to have a good product, but they also needed some good propaganda, and the spring couplets were an advertisement. What Li Tiezhen said also moved Gao Shunchan. Our mission is just and honourable, and I refuse to hide our light under a bushel. In the end, Li had been right. Many people learned about the church from the spring couplets. They came in to listen to the revival meetings and ultimately joined. Later on, officials from the Bureau of Religion had come to the church and asked them about their activities. But the officials' attitude was not at all antagonistic. They didn't say much, and after they'd gone, nothing more was heard from them. Over the last 2 years, the government had been keeping a very low profile. Gao Shunchan was a graduate of the provincial university. Before going to prison, he'd been a middle school teacher and an avid reader of the reading journal, right up to the moment he came to believe in Jesus Christ. He was an intellectual, not from the peasant background like Li Tiezhen and the others, and so he worried a lot more than they did. He was particularly concerned that the government's lenient policy might not last long, because the number of believers in the whole country was growing very fast, especially in terms of the membership of Buddhist organizations and Protestant churches. Gao Shunchang had a number in mind, 150 million. Most of them had joined in the last 2 years, and the so-called home churches accounted for 80% of them. Ever since liberation, except for the worker and peasant classes, there had never been an interest group that comprised such a large proportion of the national population. During past crackdowns on the landlords and rich peasants, on the capitalist class and rightists, it had always been the great majority against a small minority. But now, a divided majority of 1.3 billion was faced by a united minority of 150 million religious believers. Surely the Communist Party could not suppress Christianity the way they had the Falun Gong movement. But how could the Communist Party not be apprehensive about so many Christian believers? Gao Shunchan both hoped that the number of Christians would continue to increase rapidly and feared that the Communist Party might turn on them. He prayed to God to give the Christian churches another 10 years of peace in which to develop, and swore that he would work in those 10 years to see that the number of Christians reached 350 million. That would equal a quarter of the population, a critical number that he thought would ensure the security of the church. In order to protect their long-term development, Gao proposed that each Christian order or sect attend to its own affairs only. The evangelicals, the liberals, the fundamentalists, and the charismatics should not meet together, and churches within the same sect should not come together too often. He didn't want the government to have the impression that the home churches were developing into province-wide or even nationwide organizations. Many people who attended the churches didn't understand his concern, and they criticized him for being insufficiently open or caring too much for his own church group or even for trying to set himself up as a supreme leader. Gao Shen Cheng told them, however, that the main thing was to communicate directly with God and not to communicate with each other. Another thing that Gao Shen Cheng himself could do was to write articles and circulate them to the various believers. This was actually a way of sending information to the government. His most important theme was, God is God and Caesar is Caesar. He wrote that the Christian church did not seek secular political power. It was a force for social stability, and thus the secular government should not interfere with religion. His hope was that he could influence the government to change its usual policy and accept the idea that politics and religion were separate realms. He wanted to erect a firewall between the political regime and his religion, and that would be of great assistance to the development of religion at this point in time. He also wrote blogs under several names to support those Beijing scholars who advocated the desensitization of religion. However, Gao Shen Cheng didn't advocate putting extra pressure on the government during the desensitization process, and he was opposed to the demands of urban radical Christian intellectuals for official recognition of the Home Church movement and for the legalization, open operation, and free publicization of formerly underground churches. He believed that the government could not officially recognize the home churches. Desensitization was their bottom line. After desensitization, the best thing would be for the government to act as though it were unaware of the underground churches, and for the Bureau of Religion to act as though it had never heard of any home churches outside the three self-patriotic denomination. The home churches should not do anything to embarrass the government. If they didn't cause any trouble, everybody could save face and everybody could function well. Gao Shen Cheng thought that later generations would probably look back and say that this was the purest age of Chinese Protestant Christianity. Because it operated outside the three self-patriotic church, Protestant Christianity still retained its underground character, and there were very few secular benefits to becoming a member of the church. So most of the new members joined the church with a pure heart. They were practicing faith for the sake of faith. If some church leaders or volunteer workers became corrupt, they were the exception and not the rule. People in China who were genuinely ambitious for fame, profits, or power joined the Communist Party. The so-called democratic parties, commercial interest groups, organized crime gangs, or the entertainment industry. Comparatively few would choose the religious arena. Even if they did, they would join the government-recognized religious organizations or found a sect of their own. They would not be very likely to join a Protestant denomination. On the other hand, in a country like the United States, where Protestant Christianity was the mainstream religion, the churches could hardly avoid being associated with fame, profit, power, and interest groups. Gao Shen Cheng hoped that Chinese Christianity could continue to develop underground for a long time, so that ambitious characters would not be interested in the home church movement, and Chinese Christians would be able to remain as pure-hearted as they were now. The Church of the Grain Fallen on the Ground had quite a good reputation in Chinese Christian circles, and since all its leaders had spent time in prison, many foreign Christians came to see them. Li Tiezhen and the others were particularly happy to associate with foreigners, but Gao Shen Cheng was quite wary of this. He was afraid that the Communist Party would charge them with the crime of collaborating with foreign powers. From his exchanges with visitors from abroad, Gao Shen Cheng realized even more clearly that although the Christian churches didn't aspire to secular power, they could still be drawn into politics, as in America, where the evangelical Christians frequently worked on issues with the Republican Party and its right-wing factions that supported the interests of big capitalists. Some Americans had actually come to Henan to see Gao Shen Cheng and urge him to oppose the Chinese government's birth control policies, but he had refused to do so. To this day, American Christian church groups have never invited this excellent Chinese Christian intellectual and charismatic leader of the underground church movement to visit the United States, not to mention visit the White House and meet the president. What Gao Shen Cheng was able to do was to insist that the Church of the Grain Fallen on the Ground should not accept monetary contributions from abroad, nor receive Bibles illegally smuggled into China, nor invite non-Chinese pastors to preach in their churches. Some people had actually accused Gao Xiongchen of promoting a no-no-no patriotic church. Fortunately, up to this point, Li Tiezhen and the others had agreed with Gao Xiongchen on these important policies, the main reasons being that the Chinese economy was very strong, church members donated a considerable amount of money, and the church had no need of foreign donations and even less need of foreign Bibles. There was one sort of positive development, however, that sometimes gave Gao Xiongchen a major headache. After joining the church, the faithful had a natural cohesion based on their common identity, and they wanted to express Christ's spirit of universal love by collaborating on common goals and mutually protecting one another. If some brother or sister in the Lord was in trouble, they felt duty-bound to rush to his or her aid. Gao had heard that there had already been many occasions when collusions between business people and government officials had infringed the rights and well-being of the common people, and when members of the underground churches were among those ordinary victims, their brothers and sisters in the faith organized themselves to resist the business and bureaucratic interest groups. In the mind of the government officials, these incidents could easily be regarded as a confrontation between the believers and the regime. Some local officials already regarded the home churches as a thorn in their flesh, and they had put a great deal of pressure on the Bureau of Religion to do something about them. If these incidents kept recurring, they might cause the government to reverse its present relatively lenient policy. This was precisely why the appearance of Little Xi caused Gao Xiongchen both joy and anxiety. His face became flushed. The Lord must have guided her to them. Thanks be to the Lord. Ever since the Warm Springs Fellowship had been established, he had stood in the yard and guided many lost sheep back into the Lord's embrace. The difference was that as soon as he saw Little C, he knew she was not local. She had a certain air of culture about her. She was an intellectual like himself. After Little C had been in Warm Springs a while, Gao Xiongchen saw that she read the Bible quite seriously and that the questions she asked were very sophisticated and not at all trivial. What she most wanted to understand was why they all believed in God and why the church members, after being suppressed and forced underground, didn't harbour any hatred. On the contrary, they were even happier than anyone else. "Because we have love in our hearts, because we have the Lord Jesus Christ," said Gao Xiongchen in his sermons. Little Xi appreciated the mutual concern the brothers and sisters of the fellowship had for one another. It was much more sincere than the class solidarity she had been taught since childhood. This kind of loving friendship recalled to her the intellectual she'd met in the Wudaogou restaurant during the 1980s. They had had a similar sort of kindred spirit. Now it was all gone with the wind. She could not help wondering to herself, if they didn't have religious faith, could good people in China still keep on being good? In China's current conditions, with this political system and prevailing social mood, it's not at all easy to guard one's own virtue alone, as the Confucian philosopher Mencius advised. What kind of moral and spiritual power can make one want to be good? Without religious faith, it's just too difficult to be a good person. Little C didn't, however, have the urge to believe in religion. All her life, she'd been a faithful disciple of materialism and atheism, and she could not change her mind. Her reason made her resist the claims of theistic religion. The only person in the fellowship with whom she could have a high-level discussion was Gao Xiongchen, but as the main preacher of all four fellowships, he couldn't stay in Warm Springs all the time. So Little C decided that wherever Gao Xiongchen went, she would go with him, listen to his preaching, and ask him further questions. There was something else about the fellowship that Little C was only vaguely aware of. Those humble and devout disciples of Christ also exhibited a mild form of dogmatic self-satisfaction. "We alone know the truth," that made her feel somewhat uneasy. Although Gao Xiongchen was very enthusiastic when he preached the gospel, in everyday life, he seemed to carry a great load of care and a certain melancholy. He also had to cope with his lameness, and little she felt it was very easy to communicate with him. She decided to get closer to him. Little she had no romantic notions, but Gao Xiongchen certainly did, and was even thinking that it was about time for him to take a wife. But little she was not yet a Christian, and all those posts she put on the internet under the name of Mai Sibusu might cause trouble. It was at this stage in their friendship that the Zhang family village incident occurred. Many peasant families in Zhang family village were members of the Christian Fellowship. A short while earlier, the township government, in collusion with a business interest group, had violated their rights and enclosed their land. When the other brothers and sisters in the fellowship discussed the situation, little C was particularly enthusiastic. She explained many legal concepts to them and urged them to defend their legal rights. When everybody learned that she had studied law, they greatly admired her knowledge. They planned out a three-part strategy. First, they would go to the county court and file a suit against the township government. Second, they would stage a protest demonstration in front of the township government headquarters. And third, they would make a real-time record of the demonstration and put all the evidence of the township government's corruption on the internet for wider distribution. This last move was because Little C told them, "The internet is the people's central discipline committee and virtual public security authorities." But some were worried that if they acted this way, the church would be drawn into the peasants' rights defense movement with hard-to-predict consequences. Gao Xiongchang talked to Li Tiajun about these developments and asked Li to dissuade the fellowship members from broadening the scope of the Zhang family village incident. Who would have imagined that Li Tiajun would turn around and criticize Gao Xiongchang? "Old Gao," he said, "when I have something to say, I say it. Everybody now believes that you and little C are a couple, but she's become Big Sister Gao. She's the outside and you're the inside. This Mai Zibuzi woman is speaking on your behalf." A love that passeth all understanding. As they entered Henan province, Fang Chaodi began to recount the many coincidences that had occurred in his life. "Old Chen, do you believe in coincidence?" he asked. Old Chen thought that as a writer of fiction, he had to rely on coincidence, but in real life, he felt that the value of coincidence was overestimated. He didn't need to answer Fang Chaodi very often, because Fang would just keep on talking anyway. Fang had not stopped talking since they had left Beijing that morning. So in answer to this particular question, Old Chen just shrugged his shoulders. "I knew I didn't have to ask you," said Fang Chaodi. "As a writer, you must believe in coincidence. You know that life is just like fiction. Everything is coincidence. If not, I would not be driving into Henan with you today." "Have you read the American writer Paul Auster's novels of coincidence?" Old Chen asked out of curiosity. "No," said Fang, "but I've read the mystery stories of Seicho Matsumoto. Without coincidence, there'd be no fiction." "Fiction is one thing," said Old Chen, "and real life is something else. Most coincidences are probably predestined. On the surface, they look like coincidences, but in the background, heaven's net is wide-meshed and nothing can escape it," as old Lao Tzu said. "Cause and effect are always there, and there are always clues, but most of the time, we can't see the clues." "A really perceptive analysis," Old Chen said Fang. "Really perceptive." "Wow," exclaimed Old Chen, looking at his cell phone. "Zhengdu has found new posts by Mai Zibuzi on three websites. One says that she's finally swept away the ghost of 1983. Another says that she's in W County in J City in H Province, helping some peasants defend their legal rights. Huyang's text said that the church is in Jiazhou in Henan. That's J and H. All we have to do is find W County." "Wen County," said Fang. "It must be Wen County, because I've been there. It's another coincidence." "Then let's just head for Wen County," said Old Chen, reluctant to dispute Fang's logic and setting the GPS. Gao Xiongcheng's college classmate, Liu Xing, was the vice minister of the Jiazhou Municipal Committee Propaganda Department. He was in charge of media propaganda. When Gao Shengchun called him in the morning, Liu Xing immediately and with no hesitation invited him to the Yiwan Hotel for dinner.
"We can have a good talk then," Liu said.
If it had been 2 or 3 years earlier, Liu Xing would not have wanted to be seen in public talking to Gao Shengchun. But after the last change in the local administration, when he hadn't been promoted, he knew now that his career had reached its high point. He was already 50 years old. He hadn't made it into this new leadership group, so he didn't have any future prospects for promotion. So now, what difference would it make to be seen having dinner with his old college friend? Feng Xiaodi and Old Chen had lost a few hours visiting Happy Village, and so it was already 9 o'clock in the evening when they reached Jiazhou City, too late to go on to the Warm Springs Township. They had to stay overnight in the Jiazhou area. By the time Feng Xiaodi, at Old Chen's insistence, had registered at the four-star Yiwan, in a private room in the hotel's restaurant, Liu Xing and Gao Shengchun had already had a few rounds of drinks and were about to begin a serious discussion. Gao Shengchun told Liu about the trouble his church was facing, that some of the brothers and sisters in the fellowship had become involved in the Zheng family village land rights dispute, and that things were likely to get more heated. Religious affairs came under the Bureau of Religion and not under Liu Xing's department, so Gao Shengchun could discuss the situation with him just as an old friend. Gao Shengchun knew that he could not start off by asking Liu Xing to show him how to solve his problem. If he did, Liu Xing certainly would not want to tell him the truth about anything. Gao Shengchun simply told his friend about his problems, and then they went on drinking and chatting, waiting for Liu to say something important. Although Liu Xing had downed quite a few drinks, he had been a seasoned bureaucrat for so many years that getting him to talk was like getting blood from a stone, and nobody could get the goods on him. He said that all levels of government were now studying a document from Party Central, and they were going to be tested on it. He could recite it by heart. "Our party's governing philosophy in the present stage of development is to practice virtuous government for the people and to manage the relationship between the party cadre and the masses. The party cadre are the servants of the people, and the people are the parents of the cadre. The party cadre must correctly handle contradictions among the people. Establish a dispute resolution mechanism for contradictions and disputes throughout the entire society. Establish an early warning mechanism to maintain social stability. Work actively to prevent and to handle properly all types of collective incidents. Maintain a stable and harmonious society. Follow the law to crack down severely on all types of illegal criminal activities, and above all, always make the protection of our nation's security and fundamental system China's priority number one core interest." "In other words," explained Liu Xing, "the government now wants to maintain a posture of solving the common people's problems. Thus, they must not allow the outbreak of any collective incidents to disrupt their harmonious society. The party officials not only must not provoke the common people, but they must also remain vigilant and have advance warning to head off any possible mass demonstrations, resolve issues before anything happens, make big problems small and small problems disappear. If the party cadre lack this early warning sense and an incident of collective protest occurs, no matter how it is finally resolved, party officials will have to take the blame in the end." "What is one-party dictatorship?" "Dictatorship simply means that the ruling party has the absolute power to practice strict dictatorship whenever it wants to. At that point, the entire apparatus of state can practice dictatorship against the people or a portion of the people without authorization or any limitation by the people. By the same token, under a one-party dictatorship, when the ruling party wants to avoid trouble, it will try to make the people everywhere feel the paternalistic solicitude of the party state government. Today, China is in a period when the party wants to avoid trouble. Only the core interest of the Communist Party's fundamental one-party rule must not waver, however flexible its manoeuvres or moderate its methods." Gao Shengchun understood all this only too well. His church had been able to develop without government interference for the past 2 years because the government's present policy was to avoid trouble.
The officials were all afraid that some mass incident might occur in their jurisdiction, afraid of losing their positions, and so nobody dared to poke a hornet's nest. And the underground churches were just such hornet's nests.
The swan, it floated on the English River. Ah, the rose of high romance, it opened wide. A suntan woman yawned me through the summer. And the judges watched us from the other side. I told my mother, mother, I must leave you. Preserve my room, but do not shed a tear. Should rumors of a shabby ending reach you, it was half my fault and half the atmosphere. But the rose I sicken with a scarlet fever, and the swan I tempted with a sense of shame. She said at last I was her finest lover, and if she withered I would be to blame. The judges said you missed it by a fraction. Rise up and brace your troops for the attack. Ah, the dreamers ride against the men of action. Oh, see the men of action falling back. But I lingered on her thighs a fatal moment. I kissed her lips as though I thirsted still. My falsity, it stung me like a hornet. The poison sank and it paralyzed my will. I could not move to warn all the younger soldiers that they had been deserted from above. So on battlefields from here to Barcelona, I'm listed with the enemies of love. And long ago she said I must be leaving. Ah, but keep my body here to lie upon. You can move it up and down, and when I'm sleeping, run some wire through that rose and wind the swan. So So daily I renew my idle duty. I touch her here and there, I know my place. I kiss her open mouth and I praise her beauty. And people call me traitor to my face. Thank you.
land. I'll sing you the law of the ranger's command to hold a six shooter and never to run as long as there's bullets in both of your guns. I met a fair maiden, her name I don't know. I asked her to the roundup with me, would she go? She said she'd go with me to the cold roundup and drink that hard liquor from a cold bitter cup. We started for the roundup in the fall of the year, expecting to get there with a herd of fat steer. When the wrestlers broke on us in the dead hour of night, she rose from her warm bed, a battle to fight. She rose from her warm bed with a gun in each hand, saying, come on, cowboys, and fight for your land. Come on, all you cowboys, and don't ever run. As long as there's bullets in both of your guns.
Tree of mankind, roots grow up in the Thank you. alone I stand with my falling tears. Weak from the burden that has tested the faith of poor people for years. Who dares to confront this mass confusion? Insanity reigns supreme, an unholy giant. Radicals cry for want of a solution.
Someone please tell me how hand is me. Someone please tell me why God is me.
Music, the religion on offer to a beardless population. Experience herself has taught me. Look to the smiles on godly children's faces. Segregation, a disguised form of manipulation. Mission to civilize all races.
Someone please tell me how hand is me. Someone please tell me why can't it?
They question my integrity, challenge my faith. So I stand upright as proof to their history.
Here come the judge.
You must plead guilty or not guilty.
The sounds of time will answer. I will be as common as the air they breathe. Poor people culture will dominate the world news. On unclean paper they do read.
Someone please tell me how hand is me. Someone please tell me why God is me.
Here come the judge.
Energy from
every ball. Make what you will. Are you with or without? And the force cannot be blamed. Just the hunger or greed, supplying the earth to try. Dirty water, to supply, not round, traveled far too long.
In every direction you turn, touch fire and burn to earn self-recognition over all preoccupy your nonsense. Leave my innocence, savor this aroma of a new experience. High intelligence bound for the underground. We burrow deep down. I originate like the word individual. Visual, visionary, I vary in all of a see my eye view. Multiply to the big bad city with our human emotion running wild, not fit for the child of all ages. Accelerate speed of light, moving closer to the center. Enter at your own, if you will. Still the hustling, bustling, busy beehive is alive and kicking. I'm picking the moment. Gotta get away from this monotonous called the capital L up in every minute that I'm in it.
Sur Jet FM 91.2. Culture et éducation, c'est ce que propose Microculture ou Vers l'éducation nouvelle. Puis, à 18h, retrouvez Sample et moi et ses dissections musicales.
Vous êtes bien sur Jet FM au 91.2 et c'est parti pour Microculture.
Ils ont marché!
Pourquoi c'est drôle?
Parce que c'est de l'humour.
Comprenons parfaitement. Mais pourquoi c'est drôle, l'humour?
Maître Ken.
Enfin, vous ne m'en connaissez pas.
Les dates arrivent sur
le roi du gâteau.
Il dit 5, 4, 3, 0 et après, paf, pastèque.
Allô?
C'est du journalisme total.
Avec un chapeau, plus évident.
Oh là là, il y a beaucoup de peur, hein. Encore une autre.
Non, mais tu te prends pour un Jedi ou quoi? Faire des passes avec les mains comme ça.
Je veux juste une pomme chip.
Répétez.
Juste une pomme chip ou deux, je suis un fanat des pommes chip.
Il faut qu'il ait l'air drôle, comme
je suis désolé.
Ça veut dire quoi, marrant, putain de merde à la con, bordel? Qu'est-ce que j'ai tellement poilant? Dis-le-moi, dis-moi ce qui est marrant.
Ouais, bah, j'ai connu un mec de droite une fois, il avait 10 fois plus de clash.
Ah oui, voilà, là c'est drôle.
Bonjour, bonsoir à tous, bienvenue sur le plateau de Microculture, sur Jet FM toujours. Aujourd'hui, on va commencer le troisième épisode de la deuxième saison de Microculture, et le thème sera la subversion. Autour de la table, j'ai avec moi aujourd'hui, comme d'habitude, Hugo.
Bonsoir, bonjour tout le monde.
Et Salomé.
Bonsoir.
Du coup, ce thème de la subversion qu'on a choisi, un thème pas facile, on vous l'avoue. Pour rappel, la subversion, alors la définition Wikipédia, c'est « La subversion est un processus d'action sur l'opinion par lequel les valeurs d'un ordre établi sont contredites ou renversées. Ce qui est un thème qui veut un peu tout et rien dire, selon si on le prend de la façon la plus stricte possible ou la plus large. Pour cette émission, donc, qui concerne toujours la culture, on s'est dit que dans la culture, la subversion, c'est une démarche de renversement des codes d'un milieu et ou d'un genre, avec la plupart du temps un facteur choc. Bon, ce qui est encore un élargissement du sujet qui nous laissait
plus ou moins. Mais de toute façon, on va avoir l'occasion de préciser les raisons du pourquoi de ce qu'on a choisi dans ce thème.
Exactement. Et du coup, on va pouvoir commencer tout de suite. Et c'est Hugo qui va commencer aujourd'hui.
Yes, c'est parti. J'attaque avec un sujet jeu vidéo aujourd'hui. Non, c'est pas mon premier, j'allais le dire, mais ça me fait quand même plaisir déjà de parler autre chose que de film de temps en temps. Mon sujet, en fait, ça va être, il a un peu pour point de départ cet état de fait qui est que l'industrie du jeu vidéo actuel est majoritairement, surtout très grand public et surtout celle qui du coup s'impose et qui est la plus présente aux yeux de tout le monde, elle a une position de presque d'allergie à la politique, en fait. Et il y a eu énormément d'exemples. Déjà récemment, il y a beaucoup de cas de petits dossiers sur toutes les plus grandes boîtes du milieu, qu'on ait des énormes casseroles de harcèlement et de trucs pas très cool qui méritent de se prendre dans la gueule en ce moment. Et en plus de ça, ça fait partie d'un espèce de fond idéologique des boîtes qui essayent un peu de désavouer totalement le moindre engagement politique dans leurs œuvres. L'exemple le plus parlant de ça, c'est le comportement de Ubisoft depuis quelques années. Ubisoft, que tout le monde connaît, on a tous joué et aimé à des jeux d'Ubisoft, plus ou moins, que ce soit les vieux avec Prince of Persia, Rayman ou ce genre de choses, ou les plus récents avec les Assassin's Creed.
Ou Just Dance.
Just Dance, c'est en plus, tu fais bien de le dire, parce que c'est certainement le truc qui fait le plus de ventes chez eux. Tous les ans, depuis 10 ans.
Oui, oui.
Largement. Par exemple, voilà, Ubisoft, eux, ça fait 3 Far Cry qui sortent et qui traitent de sujets politiques et de contextes avec des dictateurs, avec des révolutions, avec des milices, des trucs comme ça, et qui se disent qu'ils n'arrêtent pas de communiquer sur le fait que c'est pas politique, le jeu vidéo c'est une fête, c'est un divertissement et pas trop un art. Du coup, ils défendent pas, à cause de ça, ils défendent pas trop cette position. Et le pire exemple de ça,